You're listening to Siren Radio. My name's Steve Corr, and this is Word Perfect, where we're going to have another afternoon of chatting to one of the wonderful writers who have come through Impspired.com. And today we are joined by DC Diamondopoulos, all the way from sunny LA, or near enough, anyway. Hello and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Steve. I'm actually in Cambria, California, which is on the Central Coast, halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco, but I come from Los Angeles, so you're right there.
Yeah, well, believe me, when we're talking about that little difference and we're all the way over here in rainy England, that's pretty much LA to us. Yes. Although I think you live in a beautiful place. From I did a bit of Googling when you told me where you lived, and it looks like a beautiful place to be.
It is, and it was settled by the English, believe it or not. Every street here in Cambria has an English name. We live on Wilton. Yeah.
We do get some things right then. Yes. I just find it very bizarre in this country that we have lots of 4th of July celebrations happening around here.
Oh.
And it always confuses me. I think, why are we celebrating the day that we lost?
Oh. Yeah, really. Well, we celebrate because of the day that we won, so...
Well, yeah, I can understand that one. That one makes way more sense to me. But so tell us, for those people sitting at home, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my father was in the military, so we moved around a lot. I was born in Fairborn, Ohio, at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I grew up, well, all over. At the age of 10, my parents came to Southern California. And I stayed there, and I left Los Angeles, that area, it was in the late 90s, and I came to Cambria. So I've been here for some time, for many years. And I loved Los Angeles, but it was time to get out of the city, and I really wanted to get into nature and live where I am now. And I was fortunate enough to do that.
And so what led you into writing then? How did that happen?
Well, I was an actress for years. I did a lot of stage, a little bit of TV and film, but mostly theater. And it was when I got into this improvisation group that I started creating my own characters. And I thought, oh, this is fun. Plus, I was more unlimited than I was in acting. And from there, when we moved to Cambria, I started writing. And it isn't like I always wanted to be a writer. I didn't. I loved poetry as a child and wrote some. But it was really when I got out of the city and I got into nature and thought about what do I want to do, that I joined the Cambria Writers Workshop in Cambria, not knowing that they were the most prestigious writers workshop in California. They've been around for over 35 years. It must be like 40 years now. And I started doing workshops. I started doing UCLA extension classes, and it just evolved naturally. So it all started with doing improvisation. That's when I realized I wanted to do something else, really. And with acting, I mean, with writing, you know, I can be anyone. I can be a 75-year-old black man. I can be an alien. I can be this, that. I can be anything, anyone. So I've never been happier now than writing and doing what I'm doing.
Incredible. That's brilliant. And just to say, while we've been sort of emailing and working on the book, which we will talk about a little bit later on in the program, I felt a little of a kindred spirit kind of thing between us. And my dad was in the RAF.
Oh, really?
I started off as an actor. I then fell into writing as I joined a writers group. And it's also snowballed from there. So no wonder we've had so much connection in email.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
A shared existence.
Yes, we have. And I knew when you just casually asked, oh, do you have a short story collection? And I had been through two other people wanted me to publish with them, but it didn't feel right. But with you, it felt there was no turning back. And I felt that connection with you too, Steve, immediately.
Amazing. No, it's been a brilliant process working with you, and it's just nice to have nice people around you, isn't it? So
well, it's mutual, believe me.
No, that's good. That's great to hear. So, I mean, the book has been incredible. So we're going to talk about stepping up in a short while.
Okay.
But what inspires you to really pick up a pen? Is there anything particular at the moment that's really kind of caught your attention?
You know, it's real interesting. I started writing the first short story. The two first short stories I wrote got honorary mentions from the Soul Making Keats competition. And I thought, I might be good at this. And I started writing, and that was about 5 years ago, maybe a little longer, not much. And I started writing one story after the other. It was like when I was finishing one story, I already had another story in mind. And I did this for 5 years, and this was through the course of over 30 stories. So I never had any downtime. I write about what I'm passionate about, what I care about. I'm all for equality for everybody joining in and coming together. And I hate racism, homophobia, sexism, anything that separates us, I don't like. I'm not comfortable with it. So I think that's a theme that runs throughout my writing. And I like bringing in the humanity with these stories as well. So I guess it's mostly passion. I like locations. I go to most of the locations that I write about, if I can. Obviously, when I'm writing sci-fi, I can't, but then I just let my mind kind of drift. But I do go to the locations, regardless of whether they're in the slums or in their beautiful, or if they're in beautiful locations, I go there because I can get something from them, and I want to experience what other people are feeling, and I also want to experience what my characters are feeling.
Fantastic. No, and I think that does come across in the stories that you write. It does have that feeling of just honesty and integrity, and the characters are strong and the locations are great. And I think it really does come out in the stories that you write. And they're so... I was thinking specifically about stepping up at the moment, but they're so different as well.
Yeah, they are. And that surprises me because I don't think in terms of, oh, am I going to make this different, experimental? Is this going to be that, this or that? I just go ahead and write it and do the best I can. And I'm fortunate to have really good people around me. I have a friend, Cindy Rankin, who has read everything I've written. Pamela Hartman is another woman. And then I take it to my CWW group, and they critique it. And that's invaluable information I get from these women, and also from the group itself, which is filled with wonderful published authors and very accomplished people.
No, I think when you can get that, you know, that eyes looked at it, it just fills you with that little bit more confidence as well. Because if it can pass through that panel of people, then you know you're really onto something good.
Yeah, really. Yeah, they're not. Yeah, they can be hard, but you know that's what you want, because you want to make it as good as you can. And sometimes the critiques don't. If it doesn't feel right or it doesn't hit me right, I won't go with it. I have to really drop down into myself and say, I value the critiques, but at the same time, I have to live with what I publish. So that's really important.
No, I think that's important. I think that's an important thing for anybody who's sort of sitting at home, who's got something that they've written, is to know that when you go to people, even if they are quite well-respected people, if you know why you've written it and what it is that you're writing about, and they critique that, or they tell you that you're wrong, you have to be able to step back and objectively say, well, am I wrong? Or is that just an opinion? Because actually, if you changed your piece of writing every time somebody gave you a critique for it, you'd never finish. Because there'll always be someone who will see something slightly
different.
Yeah. So being strong enough to just say, no, this is my story. I've told my story. I'm happy now that that's a completed thing. And, and that takes something, especially when you're early on in a writing career.
Exactly. But I couldn't agree more with you.
So what I'd really like to know is if you would be willing to actually read as a piece.
I would love to. The first piece I'm going to read is called 1992. It was nominated for the Pushcart Prize, along with one of my other stories, for 2020. And it's also 1992 was featured in Stepping Up. So whenever you're ready, Steve, I'll be glad to read it.
Let's go for it. So this is DC Lamidopoulos and her piece 1992.
A black cloud of smoke near the intersection of Florence and Normandy drifted toward Mrs. Kim's California dry cleaning store in South Central Los Angeles. She turned the sign to closed and locked the door. Her husband phoned, telling her to come home. The jury had acquitted the four white police officers accused of beating Rodney King. Trouble had begun. She'd seen the video of the policeman clubbing the man when he was down. Didn't seem right. The Kims in their 50s socialized with and hired only other Koreans. With their two daughters, they lived the American dream in a Korean cocoon. A year before, Soon-Ja Do shot Latasha Harlins, a black teenager, in the back of the head in Do's convenience store and spent no time in jail. Since then, Mrs. Kim's black customers would grab their clothes and leave without saying goodbye. She didn't kill the girl, but she felt guilty. Mrs. Kim hurried as she took the money out of the cash register and put it in a bag with the day's receipts. She wanted to leave before Mrs. Johnson came for her 6 o'clock Wednesday pickup. She was a good customer, and they used to make friendly chit-chat about their children. But an awkwardness had grown between her and the tall black woman with the dark red hair and pretty fingernails. Mrs. Kim grabbed her keys. She remembered the folding security gate had to be closed. But when she got to the door, she saw Mrs. Johnson park her car. Mrs. Kim rushed to the back and hid, waiting for the woman to leave. Line break. No justice. That's what Mrs. Johnson thought when she parked her car in front of the dry cleaning store. Times like this made her heart drag. Made her so angry she wanted to go to that Simi Valley courthouse and burn it down to where her heart lay. Then she saw the close sign on the door and caught the bird-like figure of Mrs. Kim scurrying away. Ever since the Do woman went free, Mrs. Kim, once good-hearted and sociable, never looked her in the eye, never smiled, not even a goodbye. She considered changing cleaners, but she'd been going to the Kims for years. She liked how they cleaned her hospital uniforms and her choir rope and could depend on her weekly 6 o'clock pickup. KFWB reported incidents of rioting. Mrs. Johnson locked her car. Smoke funnels dotted the late April sky. She wanted to get her cleaning and get home to her husband and two sons. As she walked to the door, she didn't like the unchristian feeling she had toward Koreans she did business with. But why treat all black people as if we were going to rob them? Mrs. Johnson knocked on the door. With no answer, she pounded. I saw you, Mrs. Kim, she shouted, rattling the door. I need my clothes now. Embarrassed, Mrs. Kim came out from the back. Trembling, she unlocked the door and opened it. So sorry. Husband wants me home. She went behind the counter and reached for the conveyor switch when a loud crash spun her around. Mrs. Johnson shrieked. Across the street, young men were throwing bricks at Mr. Chow's liquor store. They ransacked his business, darting out with cases of beer and cartons of cigarettes. Call the police, Mrs. Johnson shouted. Lying dead. A mob of looters smashed the windows of Mr. Lee's shoe repair shop. Rioters charged down the block, raiding stores and setting them on fire. Security alarms blared over car horns, breaking glass, screams and hooting. Mrs. Kim sobbed. She watched paralyzed by the violence, as real as a Korean War of her childhood. A whole block went up in flames. Oh no, they come for me. Mrs. Johnson shouted, do you have a gun? Mrs. Kim turned to answer when a brick crashed through her front window. Glass shattered. They both screamed, no, ball bat. We go out back. Mrs. Johnson ran around the counter and snatched the bat from Mrs. Kim. Line break. A loud boom rocked the building. Mrs. Johnson ran to the window. In the alley, a gang of teenagers was smashing car windows, pouring gasoline inside and torching them. One of the boys wore a Laker jersey. Another, an L.A. Dodger cap turned backwards. Those boys could be her sons. Their rage was her rage. Yet she held on to Dr. King's teachings of love and nonviolence. "We trapped," Mrs. Kim cried, standing beside her. "Where police?" The front of the shop exploded. The smell of burning plastic overwhelmed them. Mrs. Johnson slid the bolt back and opened the door. "I go too." "No, stay here." Ball bat in hand, Mrs. Johnson, as pissed off as she'd ever been, walked into the alley, the smell of gasoline swirling in thick smoke and the sound of sirens wailing and dogs howling. Her heart ached for her people, but burning down their own neighborhood? She prayed to Jesus as she walked into the madness. "You with the Laker jersey," she yelled. "I know your mama." She choked the handle of the club. "You think she'd be proud of you? You wigging out lady," he said, strutting toward her, moving his hands gangsta style. "You don't know nothing." At 5'10", she was at least 4 inches taller. She took a step forward. "Get your homies and get out of here, or I'll tell your mama what you've been up to." They were locked in a stare down. His dog stopped to watch. "Come on," Laker jersey said to his homeboys. "You don't tell my mama nothing," he muttered and swaggered away. Mrs. Kim ran to her van, unlocked it, started the engine, and opened the passenger door. Mrs. Johnson jumped in. She thanked the Lord for their deliverance. "Glad you come," Mrs. Kim said, with tears in her eyes as she floored the gas pedal and tore down the alley.
Amazing. Where did that story come from then? What was happening that made you think of that time, those people?
I wanted to write a flash fiction for my 20th century snapshots. And 1992 came about because I actually lived through it. Wanda and I, my wife, and I had antique stores in the San Fernando Valley at that time. And it was all around us. And I also grew up around, Black people, Korean, Jewish, gay, and it's a melting pot in Los Angeles. So I grew up around everyone and liked these people. And I thought about how this incident, the first incident with Latasha Harlins, that shooting, changed these two women. The outer circumstances changed their friendly relationship with one another, where they genuinely liked each other. But this came between them. And yet, I think when people are often in a catastrophic situation, they do come together. And I wanted those two women to come together because I had those women in my mind. I had pictures. I knew the Korean woman from, I had her in my mind. I also had the Black woman in my mind. And it was, when I had the characters are that strong, they're easier to write. And the location was there for me. I was in it. I experienced it.
Amazing. Oh, that's brilliant. Well, it brings us to the point in the program where we're going to take our first musical break. And as always, we ask our guests to select some tracks. And this show is no different. So we've asked DC Diamondopoulos here to pick our musical tracks of the day. So do you want to tell us the first piece that you've chosen?
I chose The Doors, Break On Through to the Other Side. And I chose it because not only do I love it, and I love the lyrics, and I think they were one of the greatest American bands America produced. I chose it because the characters in Stepping Up are breaking through or trying to. Some succeed, some don't, because they want to transcend whatever they're going through at the moment. And it was a hard selection to make. Steve, that really wasn't fair. Name two, I have, oh my goodness, hundreds, if not thousands. But it came to me with Break On Through. It just seemed right thematically. I love the vocal. I love the lyrics, everything about it. So I went with that for my first selection.
Sounds like a great choice. So this is The Doors with Break On Through to the Other Side. We'll be right back.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Yeah, welcome back to Word Perfect. My name's Steve Corr, and this is a show all about writers, all about writing. And we're joined today by DC Diamondopoulos. You were just listening there to The Doors, Break On Through to the Other Side. Before the break there, we were talking a little bit about what inspired you, a little bit about how you first got into writing. And then we heard that fantastic piece, 1992. What I want to talk to you about now is the book that's just come out. So tell us a little bit about Stepping Up.
Stepping Up, it's really, it's about characters who on the brink of change must choose between fear or transformation. And whether it's because of sexism, racism, or homophobia, the humanity comes through, and they're not all just about that. There are other, you know, there are other stories with other themes, but those seem to be the three main ones that I write about. When I sent this collection to you, Steve, this was the fourth time I had rearranged the sequence of the stories and changed the title. And by the fourth time, I thought I got it right. And I didn't think I got it right. I knew I had it right. And I wasn't going to change it again because I was so sure that these were the 14 I wanted to share with people. And as it is, as it turned out, you came along and it happened. And it was quite effortlessly. I had been submitting before, and as I told you, I had been with two other publishers. And I just put it aside for just a little bit. And miraculously, I didn't even have to submit it. You asked for it. I love when things happen like that.
Well, you submitted some work to Inspired that we'd already published online, hadn't we? And I just...
Oh, yes. And I knew who you were. I could work with you. I liked how you worked. And when you asked me and you said, sure, I also submitted 20th Century Snapshots. And you said, well, let's go right now with one or the other. And when I knew you were in Lincolnshire, England, I mean, that was just perfect too, because I have such an affinity with the English and England that it all just fell together.
it's nice to live here, and it finally have done me some good. So, but no, it was a brilliant book. And like I say, because we had published some of your work before, that's why I was so keen to know if you, if you had a collection, because I'd loved the few pieces I had seen. So the prospect of having even more of them gathered together in one place was just an exciting thing. So it's been a privilege for me to get to be part of that process of pulling it together and getting it ready. And you've got a beautiful cover on there as well. It looks fantastic. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the process of writing that. So you've talked about the fact that obviously you came from kind of an acting background. So the idea of a strong sense of character, I think, probably comes largely from there. But you've talked about location and the fact that you like to visit the places that you go to. When you actually sit down to write, do you have a routine or anything that you do? Do you write at a certain time of the day? Or, you know, how do you actually go about the physical act of writing?
I'm very structured, and I get up every morning and I write, and I don't care if it's, I don't care. I just write. I may not feel like it. Usually though, early in the morning, I do feel like it. I just sit there and write. And if it's a new piece, I don't critique myself. I don't edit myself. I just get it out. Sometimes I write in longhand first. Other times I just sit at the computer and just let it go. And then after that, I exercise, I meditate, I go for a walk at the East West Ranch, which is right near my home, which is along the ocean. And then I'll eat something, I come back, and then I write in the afternoon. And that's usually, I will go over what I wrote in the morning, or it depends where I'm at in the story. If I'm still just beginning with the story, I'll continue the same process of just writing without editing. And then I do this every day, 6 days a week. And then on Sunday, I'm in a different process now because I'm not writing short stories. I'm writing a novel. So it's a whole different thing, but it's the same process: early morning writing, afternoon writing. And that's what I did with the short stories. For the last 5 years, that's been a routine. But a very structured one. And it's important for me because within that structure, I find a lot of freedom. It's my time and I can do and write and just go anywhere I want to go. And it's a wonderful feeling. I love the creative process.
Oh, that's brilliant. And it's interesting to hear that because I love asking that question to writers because I get so many varied answers. I get those kind of night owls who can only write at 2 a.m. or whatever, and then those who have to wake up early, and some who are just chaotic. It's that, you know, they have to stop in the middle of a supermarket aisle and get a notebook out and write. So to hear that, you know, that idea of being a very diligent, very structured thing, just so the routine must then help with that blank page moment.
It does for me, but it's like you said, every writer has a different way of approaching it. You know, some are chaotic and it works for them. I just can't work in that kind of a situation. I want my mind can be chaotic, but I don't want my surroundings to be.
So someone who came from an acting background who decided they were going to get into writing, why did you end up with kind of short stories and fiction pieces rather than writing, say, for the stage?
I think I liked writing. I'd been working on a novel and then I set that aside and then I started the short stories. And I think what I like about short stories, and I have taken screenwriting classes, but what I like is that I can go in their head. I can do internals. I can live these people and walk in their shoes. Whereas if I'm writing a play or a screenplay, I'm kind of on the outside going into it. But like I said, I took screenwriting classes at UCLA and that really helped me in my fiction writing, especially with dialogue. So I think every genre that you're going to be in, work in, really helps you out no matter what you're doing. But I do like the fiction because I like being up close and personal with the people I'm writing about.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Brilliant explanation. The next bit I wanted to ask you about is if you were a writer who's sitting at home now, who maybe has not been actively sharing their work or anything like that, and is just sort of starting that journey into writing, what's a sort of a key piece of advice that you might offer to them?
I think I would tell them to just sit down and write anything, and don't critique yourself, don't judge yourself, give yourself some time to be alone to do that. Because if you want to be a writer, more than likely you have a gift to give, and you want to be able to give that gift. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you produce something. And that's one piece of advice I could give. The other one is to writers starting out who may submit something and get rejected, or may submit something and get accepted. I'm at a pretty level, I'm at an even keel right now. If I get rejected for something, for a piece, or accepted, I don't have the highs and lows that I once did. I realize that what I'm doing, or I realize that my source is not out there. It's within, it's inside of me. And when I realize that, I'm very centered and I can just go about my day being happy, even if I got a rejection or somebody said something awful about it. It really doesn't matter to me. Wait a minute. It may matter for about less than a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, the impact is far less severe, yeah. There's no more 3 weeks of wallowing in your back bedroom, not wanting to speak to anyone.
No.
I think that's great advice. And I do think if it's one of those things you do have to almost experience before you can agree with. So you can be given that advice to say, oh, don't let it bother you. But I think when it's when you're early on and you get a rejection, you do personally, don't you? You there, but then, like you say, as you get into it, the acceptances don't have the same high as they used to either. Everything sort of balances out, that you accept the yin and yang of life, don't you? You go, you know, I'm gonna win some and lose some others.
Right. And I'm grateful. I'm always grateful to be published, especially around. I got published today in Romania. I mean, I'm grateful for these publications. Don't get me wrong there. It isn't like I just slough it off like, ugh. But I'm grateful, but I'm not on this, for lack of a better word, bipolar thing where I'm up here and I'm down there. I'm grateful, but I'm not like running around drinking wine and kicking up my heels. Yeah.
I think it also comes from a point when you get to having a bit of self-worth and knowing that your thing is good. So if it's not accepted there, it doesn't mean that it's a bad piece of writing. It just wasn't right for that particular publication. And so you dust yourself off and move on to the next thing. So
that's exactly it.
Now,
sure.
Stepping up, so you've been busy promoting that, haven't you? I think you've done a few other interviews and you've been out and about. So how is the promotional side of the book going?
It's fun. I actually love marketing. I love promoting. And I enjoy it. And it's like things are just coming to me. I did one the other day with the Progenitor in Colorado. The most important thing is to get my time zones right, because they're all over the world. So I just had another one. I've been going to my local bookstores with the book. And as soon as I get my first box of books, I'm going to be taking it to them. They said, sure, bring it on in. And I've been doing that. I've been handing out laminated bookmarks to people that want one, that buy the book. So I'm doing social media. So it's like any avenue I can work on, I'm open to.
Fantastic. So yeah, keeping you busy at the moment then as well.
It is keeping me busy.
So if you're listening at home and you would like to get yourself a copy of Stepping Up, then there are a few ways that you can go about doing that. So you can go straight to Amazon, search for Stepping Up, search for DC Diamondopolis, and the book will come up there and you can buy yourself a copy. And that doesn't matter where you are in the world, your Amazon site will have that title ready for you to purchase. Alternatively, you can go to impspired.com, go to our authors section on there, and the very top of the page you will find Stepping Up at the moment, and then you can follow the links through there to get yourself a copy. And if you're listening to this on the podcast in a couple of weeks' time, you should hopefully find that it is also available on Barnes and Noble, so it will be there soon as well. So watch this space for those things happening. But it's getting out there, and it is a fantastic book. Excellent collection of short stories. I say every one of them is written to perfection. The characters are great. The stories are great. So if you're looking for something to read, get yourself out there, pick up a copy, like I say, straight to Amazon or to impspired.com, and you can find all the information you need to get it on there. If you're really wanting to test it out as well, if you go to inspired.com and look for DC Diamondopoulos, there's some examples of her writing up on the website there as well, so you can have a little sample, try before you buy, they say. So what's going to be next for you, DC, after this book, after you've finished all the promotional stuff with this, what's your next plan?
Well, I'm writing a novel right now. And I've been working on this, the first draft, almost a year now. And this I've been doing while doing Stepping Up. I've been working on this. I feel like if I leave these characters, I start missing them. And it's like they're pulling me back in to work on all the problems that they're encountering. And so I'm working on that. And like I said, I have my collection of 20th century snapshots. We'll see what happens there. I would love to do, once COVID is over, I'd like to get out and do book fairs and promote Stepping Up and, you know, like the olden days.
Yeah, I've almost forgotten what that feels like.
So right now, my novel is taking up a lot of my time, and I want to travel. I need to go. My protagonist is English, so I need to make another trip to England, and I need to go to New York, and I need to do these train rides and all these things that I was going to do last year. And in May, well, COVID came, and, you know, here we are. So...
incredible.
But there's a lot of research. Thank goodness for the internet. I'm doing a tremendous amount of research online, but there's nothing like being there.
No, there isn't. I think you get so much from just standing in a place. The little details and the smells and all those things that come to you. It's so much easier to write that way. But no, I definitely agree with that. So it sounds like you're busy now, and even when that's done, you're just going to continue to be busy and still got loads to write and loads to say.
I think so. I have loads to write. And I, you know, my most important thing is that I hope I entertain people. And I guess coming from an actress, being an actress, coming from a background like that, it's just, this is, even writing is entertaining. It's entertainment. So, yeah. I want to entertain, give them something to think about.
Incredible. Do you think before we sort of wrap up for today, we could maybe have one more piece from you?
Oh, I'd love to read another one. This one, The Haunting of Piedras Blancas. This was a couple of years ago. I took a tour of the lighthouse up the coast from us in Cambria, past Hurst Castle. And Wanda and I took a tour of the lighthouse. And it was one of those days that I could say for 3 hours, all I felt was bliss. It was an absolute gorgeous day. I got to see the lighthouse from a different angle because we were looking at it from the sea, looking in at the Santa Lucia Mountains. And I thought, oh my God, this something will come to me. Well, I went home and it didn't come to me. And we had gone to Amsterdam. We came back from Amsterdam, and I wrote another story in the meantime. And then one day I sat down, and this doesn't always happen, but it just came to me in a flood of prose. And it's really a mashup of sci-fi, fantasy, and goth. And I just wrote it, and it's one of those stories I didn't want to do a whole lot of revision on because I like the cadence and I like the feel of it. And I like the spirituality of it and the sexuality of it. And I wanted to leave it. And I was surprised when it started. People really reacted very well to it, which I wasn't sure how it was people were going to react, but it started getting published over and over again. And boy, I'm grateful for that. But it's one of those stories and one of those times when the writing, you're just inspired. But it took me 3 months to actually formulate the story. So this is The Haunting of Piedras Blancas. There is no end to my love for Jimyazi. I pace the ragged cliffs, searching the sea for her ship. My longing will not cease until I am entwined in her marble wash of lavender and green arms. It's dawn. The sunlight's red varnish stretches across the Santa Lucia Mountains. The mist from the sea floats through the Monterey Cypress. Backlit in pink stands the Piedras Blancas Lighthouse. The waves caress my vestige feet. The foam licks my revenant face. The damp never seeps into my gossamer bones. My long silk robe opens, my breast exposed to the witless wind. It hisses, jeers, but I am invincible, adrift in my chariot of grief. The gulls perch in conference on the white rock. Beyond is the blue empty sky, the vast sea without sails, no horizon. Blue, come Jimyazi. Am I to roam this rugged coastline for eternity, this journey without distance? I feel doomed, my struggle invisible. You must come, Jimyazi. Save me from my weariness. I skim the jagged bluff. The elephant seals raise their massive heads when they see me, then fall back to sleep. Along the winding path, I float unnoticed by gardeners and groundskeepers. I glide over the pebbled lane, past stone cottages, a gift shop, the bell and tower. Slipping through the walls of the lighthouse, I float to the stairs. Tourists gasp when I appear. The website didn't say anything about a magic show, someone says. It's like Disneyland, cries a child. Their zeal echoes around the cylindrical walls. I nod, playing along with the charade. It's not always like this. Some days people are thick with fear. They flee from my presence. When the sun shines, I'm an act. If the fog veils the coast, I'm a phantom. Most days, they don't see me at all. Ah, that's my wench. I recognize the guide's garbled, liquored voice. His gnarled laugh, a salty exhaler. He sometimes comes alone, drinking, running after me, catching air. On the step, I look into his weather-beaten face. His sunken eyes leer. Damn foolish scoundrel. Turning, gliding over the wrought iron stairs to the deck, I let my robe fall, naked. This isn't for kids. Offended parents usher their children outside, then turn for one last glimpse at my beautiful body. I continue, invulnerable. My feet sail over spiral wrought iron stairs. My fingers sweep above the narrow curving rail. Everyone has gone. Except for the guide who looks up at me and says, you elusive lash. I relish a day I grab your long red hair and make you my. He'll never get the chance. Inside the lantern room, the beacon has no purpose. Still it shines for those who live along the coast and the tourists driving by. I glide outside to the widow's walk. From the empty skies to the ocean's bed, nothing rises or descends. Jimyazi, if you love me, come. Not long past, her ship rose out of the sea, and beams of lights pranced above the waves. Particles rearranged themselves, silver glittered. The mirage shimmied into form, a shape malleable to Jim Yazzie's thoughts, horizontal, then vertical, a kaleidoscope of color reflecting the terrain, the craft visible only when she wanted. Jim Yazzie was too good for me, too advanced. Not only did I fall in love with her, but the idea of what I too might become. She couldn't suffer the stench of violence that infused my planet. If exposed too long, her breath ceased. I had to go with her or not. But how could I journey outside my own world? Fear ransacked my mind. It stuffed my schooling, programming, upbringing into a box that God forbid I break out of and beyond, until I am unfettered by the lies I've been taught, crammed it down my cranium, and just to be sure, set a lid, a square hat with a tassel on top to keep it all in. My decision to leave Earth was as ragged and split as the cliffs of my homeland. After anguishing in my cottage, gazing on memories, touching knickknacks, holding friendships in picture frames, I pondered all I would lose. The future too elusive, too great a change. My past, something I clung to. I can't leave. Jim Yazzie held me, the feeling of sadness so great no words would comfort. My heart was shrouded in sorrow. She walked the waters as her ship ascended from the sea. The vessel hovered above the waves, a silver triangle, sleek like Jim Yazzie. It rolled on its side, morphed into a vertical tower with a fissure, and she entered. A thousand lights, curved and colored, spark flashed, then disappeared. The instant she left, I knew my mistake. And so it began, the tears of regret and self-loathing. I missed the woman who was once so full of love that she knew nothing of its opposite. One day, while my mind slipped down around my ankles, I sat in my cottage, staring at a collage of empty food cartons, magazine dust bunnies, paint chips, shattered wine glasses, a broken window from where the wind whispered, "Go ahead, do it." On that day, I chose to end my suffering. With clarity restored and a mission in sight, I tossed a rope over the living room beam and tied a hoop large enough for my head, but small enough for my neck. From the kitchen, I dragged a chair and placed it underneath the shaft. I climbed on the seat, put the noose over my neck, and kicked out the chair. I dangled. Minutes went by, and still I was alive. Somewhere I drifted, first as a dark cloud, then into a gauzy realm where I was still me. Oh, my outrage to discover that I could kill my body, but never myself. A shadowy reflection of the woman Jim Yazzie loved, I roamed the rim of the bluff for another chance to leave, hoping she'd return. I saw her. In my rapture, I wailed, "Jim Yazzie." She walked the shore shouting, "Astrid, I'm here for the last time. Come before your planet strikes back for the harm done to it." I ran down the cliff. My kisses lingered deep in her neck. My hand seized her stalks of short black hair. Jim Yazzie looked through me even as my mouth covered hers, my fingertips drunk from the touch of her. Nothing, not my cries or kisses, could rouse her. Sobbing, I screamed, "Can't you see me? Don't you know I'm here?" Then she saw me and backed away. I saw the horror there in her golden eyes. Her shock pierced my translucent heart. "Please forgive me." Her kind never sheds tears. Jim Yazzie had told me that on her island in the universe, there were no reasons to cry. But looking into her perfect lavender and green marble colored face, I saw a tear on the threshold of falling. I was ashamed. She left by the way of the ocean as her ship rose out of the sea. Condemned, I pace the ragged cliffs, the gulls in flight, the lighthouse behind me, on an endless quest to be with my beloved, forever adrift, because I hadn't the daring to journey past my sphere.
That's amazing. I love that piece.
It happened, Steve. I forgot to add one thing before I sat down and wrote that. Anthony Bourdain, who had a CNN show here, I don't know if you get it in England, he had a show here on CNN, and he committed suicide, and so did Kate Spade around the same time. And I thought, what a shame that we no longer have those people here on the planet. And I think that affected me as well. I once heard that if you do commit suicide, you become a ghost. I don't know how that's, who knows? But that entered into my story writing as well. And I just wanted to enter that. Thanks for letting me say that.
Yeah, that's great. It's I say it's one of the pieces that stood out for me when I was reading through the book as well. I particularly liked that one. It does unfortunately bring us to the point though where we are simply out of time for the show, so we are going to have to wrap up for now. But I think I could talk to you about so much stuff. So perhaps in the future you'll rejoin us again, and we can talk about some things in a little bit more detail.
I would love that, Steve.
Fantastic. So it does bring us to the end of today. If you are a writer and you're looking for your next step, your next opportunity to do something, then get yourself onto impspired.com and have a look at what we've got on offer there. You can read some of our back catalogue of material, the previous issues. You can have a look at the print volumes that we've got coming out, and you can have a look at the incredible writers who give their work over to us to showcase to the world. So if you want to do that, all the details as to how you can submit your work to us or how you can keep track of what we're up to are on there. You can find us on all the major social medias, whether that's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Go and look for us, follow us, ask us questions. That's what I'm here for. So if you've got anything that you want to know about when it comes to creative writing or how to progress your writing career, please do get in touch with us. Once again, DC Diamondopoulos, thank you very much for joining us today. Incredible to hear your story and incredible to hear about the book Stepping Up, which if you want to get yourself a copy of, you can go to Amazon, wherever you are in the world, or again, you can go to impspired.com. And if you look at our authors section, the book is on there with all the relevant links that you need. And that does bring us to the end of today's show. We're going to play out with one last song. So I'm going to hand back over to DC Diamondopoulos for the final time and ask her to introduce our final track.
One of the most brilliant songs written in the 20th century by John Lennon, Imagine.
But I'm